From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of April, 2022. I'm Todd Gleason. Happy birthday to my brother Jay, and happy anniversary to Tia and Melissa Taylor. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Frayne Olson of NDSU, North Dakota State University Extension, will join us to discuss the marketplace in broad terms, and then we'll finish up our time together by having a conversation again today about the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at $7.64.5, settled 4.25 cents lower. July, $7.58.75, down 2. And new crop December, $7.18 a bushel, up 2 cents. May soybeans down 33.75 at $16.55.25. July, $27.25 lower, $16.40.75 the settlement price there. And the new crop November, $14.85.75, down 9.75 cents. They went to 15.02 today. Soybean meal, $459.10, up $9.10, and the bean oil for the day at 82 cents lower at $74.30. Soft red winter wheat in the harvest month July at $10.89, up 30.75 cents. The hard red at $11.45.5 in the July, up 35.5 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $134.80, 97.5 cents higher. Feeders up 52.5 at $159.90, and the lean hogs in the June contract at $115.25, up 45 cents for the day. Here to talk about the numbers today with us is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Find him online at bates.com.net. Hey, thank you for being with us. We appreciate that, Kurt.
Well, glad to be here, Todd. Exciting time to be watching commodities in general.
Well, they have been volatile. I'm wondering what the move in the soybeans was based upon today.
Yeah, some spread activity. Definitely buying wheat, selling beans. There for a while, they bought corn, sold some beans. But beans are just kind of non-eventful, kind of on the back burner. We saw the beans trade higher overnight, then kind of give up the gains as we were unable to really push to new highs like we've seen in like two crop corn, for example. The main thing in the beans is there's just a slowdown in demand. We're not seeing anything larger than 100,000 ton or 132,000 ton purchase every now and then. And the bean purchases are fairly decent, but the shipments are kind of running a little slow here. The concern is China, they keep promoting. They've got some COVID and some lockdown taking place, so the bean demand's kind of questionable on that. Then, two, we've seen the shift to corn late last week, and even the prior week, we heard rumblings of Chinese corn buying. Then, eventually, they did come forward today, and exporters did say they bought over 1 million metric tons of U.S. corn. And there's ideas there's probably another 1 million or 2 tons to be bought here over the near term. But just lack of giddy up and go in the soybean complex, we have the South American harvest taking place. It just kind of generates some spread activity. But we did check out the upper end. And the thing to look at in the soybean complex is we made a new high and closed lower in the futures contracts. Then the May meal, for example, we made a little new high for the move and closed below the previous day's low. So it's kind of an outside down day, and even soybean oil made a little new high on this move and closed lower. So the momentum indicators are going to kind of be a little sloppy in here, and beans could probably back and fill. On the Novembers, look for $15 to be resistance and probably pullbacks to this $14.50 area to be support, Todd.
Does the weather play at some point in the corn market?
Well, it's going to take a little time in through here. We've basically are watching the south, and yes, they are wet. But Texas, for example, they're, as of last week, we'll have an update this afternoon, they were 54% on plantings, and their average is 55. But then we'll watch the Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, and so forth. Now, they're a minor player in through here, but it does add up over time. As far as the upper Midwest, we're just now in the time window where the crop insurance guys will give you the thumbs up to get going here on it. So weather will start to be more of a factor here as we move into the last part of April. There's been times, you know, we saw some corn going into June and got lucky and it turned out. And there's been times we've had some early corn go in and didn't turn out. So we'll get her in. Then we'll see what the weather guys say as we go through the growing season.
Are there expectations from the weekly crop progress report due out from the United States Department of Agriculture at 3 o'clock Central Time today?
Yeah, the main thing will be the wheat conditions. We saw last week's good to excellent category, 30% good to excellent, and we did see a situation where out west they were windy and dry and a little bit warm, so they'll continue to monitor that wheat crop. Basically, we're looking at a smaller U.S. crop. Then with the uncertainty of the crop or the harvest activity or shipments out of that Ukraine area is going to keep that wheat market kind of juiced. The wheat July futures kind of popped above some resistance areas here, and, you know, it continued to find some commodity fund buying. We didn't see massive buying, but it was estimated the funds bought about 7,000 contracts of wheat. The thing on the crop conditions report, once we get the crop in the ground, we'll monitor that good to excellent category quite a bit, particularly for corn, because when you factor in 4 million less corn acres, if you have a yield of 177 bushels to the acre compared to what we had this past year, it's going to keep that corn carryout, new crop corn carryout, around a billion bushels. And plus, too, if China buys a little bit more corn, we ship some corn out here, our ending stocks from last year coming in this year can make that number tight. So this new crop corn is going to be a dynamic market as we go through the growing season. And these Monday afternoon crop conditions reports going to be very volatile for Monday evening trade.
The trade discount, the increases that both CONAB and USDA put into the corn numbers out of Brazil last week.
Yeah, that's a great observation because I think that's going to keep a lid on things here until we kind of see where we are for our own weather and so forth. But take a look at the world supply-demand balance sheet. Actually, if you compare an overlay, prices and the inventories we have, it suggests we actually have a lot of inventory around the world, and you have to question how high we can stay here with these inventories. But you got to remember, people are concerned about supply chain issues. We went through it with the toilet paper situation, with the unrest in the Black Sea region. Inventory, actual inventory, and having some ownership of stuff is the key. Not only in the grains, but also as guys try to get ready to go to the field here, there's situations where bearings to fix equipment and stuff's hard to get. So everybody wants to have some supplies around, clear across the whole sector until we get through the planting and get in the ground and get it going.
Hey, thank you.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Frayn Olson, agricultural economist from North Dakota State University Extension. Thank you for being with us, Frayn. Can you take me back through a couple of USDA reports? The prospective plantings, grain stocks were out at the end of the month, and then USDA checked those, relatively speaking, though this is a regular monthly report with the WASDE, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, and what they all meant to you and producers in your part of the world.
Yeah, so obviously on a national level, we're really concerned about the split between corn and soybeans. But when we dig down a little bit deeper, at least here in North Dakota, we tend to be one of those regions that is a swing state, right? When the markets need more corn and beans, we have the ability to flip some crops around. When it looks like we don't need as many acres, where there's a contraction, we have the ability to flip some acres around. So when I looked at the numbers, I guess part of this, of course, is when the survey was taken. The big question in my mind was really how many acres of spring wheat we're going to have. The corn numbers came in a little bit lighter than I was expecting. I think the I think the when I talked to farmers and some of the commodity organizations and even private analysts, they were thinking numbers probably similar to what we saw last year. But we had a slight cutback in the corn expected corn acres. The spring wheat acres were also down a little bit. But I think part of that was because of the timing. I do think we'll have closer to last year's numbers, maybe a slight increase in spring wheat seedings because of the rally that we've had now post Ukraine-Russia war. I mean, the wheat market has really taken off and gone crazy. And I don't think a lot of that shift in plantings had fully been incorporated into our prospective plantings report. The soybean numbers here in the state, I think, came out very, very close to what I was expecting. I think the surprise for some people was, where did all the extra acres go? Because we had a cutback in corn. We had a slight cutback in soybeans from last year. We had a cutback in spring wheat. Where did all the acres disappear to? And the short answer is we've got a lot of the specialty crops, these smaller market crops. And those crops came out very early and very aggressive in their contracting programs. So a lot of the acres where did they all disappear to were really gobbled up earlier in the season through these contracting programs for crops like sunflower, which is an oil seed, for canola, another oil seed, for barley, primarily for malting barley. Oats and flax prices have been absolutely crazy. Now, they're small acreage crops, but you know, by the time you make some adjustments and you add them all up, they can accumulate over the acres to get to be some pretty big numbers. So a few surprises in prospective plantings, at least here within our region, but again, nothing dramatic. We didn't see a big shift. When it comes to the grain stocks numbers, again, very similar to what the trade is expecting. I really didn't see any numbers in there that surprised me at all. I think that we got a pretty good read on what's going on locally here.
And those all get rolled eventually towards that May WASDE and the ending stocks that we get to by the end of the fall of 2023. What do you think USDA will show us in those May numbers?
In the May numbers, I guess the reason, in my opinion, the quarterly stocks numbers, especially for old crop, becomes so important is really for the corn. And it's because of that large feed number. We don't have a really good way to try and monitor on a short-term basis feed consumption. When it looks at exports, when we look at domestic crushing in the case of soybeans or domestic flour milling in the case of wheat, looking at ethanol numbers, we've got some pretty good short-term measurements for that. But the one big number is, of course, the feed number in the corn side. So about the only good way we have to measure that will be the quarterly stocks reports. Now, moving forward into May, because May is the first month that we get new information about or the current forecast for the new crop estimates. And obviously, the planted acreage numbers will come from the prospective plantings report. USDA traditionally has used a trend line yield when it comes to yield forecasts, at least earlier within the season. As a footnote, they do adjust that up and down a little bit based on planting progress. So if we get in the field a little bit earlier, they'll take the trend line yield and increase it slightly. Or, of course, if we have delayed planting, they may drop that. But it's going to be somewhere plus or minus the trend line yield for total production numbers. So in my mind, I don't think there'll be any big surprises or shock value in the production side. But this will be the first time we get an estimate or a kind of a peek into what USDA is forecasting for the consumption side. And I know, from my opinion, all eyes are going to go to the exports number specifically, because that typically tends to be the most difficult to project or forecast. Domestic consumption for the major grains doesn't vary a lot from year to year. We see some adjustments and some fine tuning. But the thing that has the shock value, the thing that's the most difficult to try and forecast or project, of course, is always the exports number. So I do think in the May report, we're going to look at all the numbers, but I think they'll zero in and spend a lot more attention on that exports number.
How low can you put ending stocks for corn?
I don't know. We'll find out.
I've seen a billion.
We look back. I guess you look back historically, 1996 was the lowest stocks to use ratio. I guess I tend to use the stocks to use ratio. because our consumption always adjusts and grows over time. But when you look at ending stocks proportional to our use and kind of how much of a margin for error do we have, that was really our low point. Now, 2012, we got close to that. But that was, again, the final number, not the projected number. And again, a lot of that was due to some yield reductions and some concerns on the production side. So the issue right now, I think both short-term and longer-term, that the markets are struggling with is how high do prices have to go to try and really ration the use, right? Where we don't run out of grain. I get a little frustrated sometimes where people say, well, we're going to run out of a certain product. That doesn't happen. What happens is we keep increasing price until people stop buying or they shift to something else. So the question for both old crop and now potentially for new crop is how high do prices have to be to try and ration that demand base to make sure that we have a bottom line that seems acceptable. And so that's really where this game we play between, you know, estimating demand and pricing gets to be a bit tricky.
Does ethanol usage play much of a role in that? Because it appears over time that automobile gasoline usage is pretty inelastic based on price.
Yes. And that's one of the things we have to think about. I commonly get this from some of my farmer audience as well. Gee, you know, gas prices are so high, you know, that means there must be a lot of profitability in the ethanol sector. And I said, well, not necessarily, because when we look at the amount of ethanol that's consumed, it's much more closely tied to how many miles we're driving. It's recognize that the reason we're adding ethanol to our fuel mix right now is because it's an oxygenate. It's a fuel additive. It's being priced as a fuel additive. It's not a replacement. It's not a one-to-one replacement for a gallon gasoline. So the reason we're using ethanol in our fuel system right now is primarily as an oxygenate. We need it to increase the octane levels. Well, as a result, then the volumes that we need for production are very, very closely tied to the miles driven. And that was one of the reasons the ethanol sector got hit so hard during COVID, was because we just didn't drive any place. So regardless of what the pricing is, we just didn't drive. We didn't need the volumes consumed. Well, now as our economy is reopened, we're driving again. I think the big question on the ethanol side will be, are we going to take vacations this summer? You know, given the higher pricing, given inflation rates, given people's consuming habits, you know, how many miles we're going to drive this summer? Because the summer driving season is really where we consume the larger volumes. And that's where, again, if we're going to have a surge in the demand side, we're going to look at higher ethanol production needs. It will likely come from that summer driving season.
Does opening ethanol up for 15% blends during the summer months make much of a difference?
I don't know. It could. And it depends on, you know, again, how price sensitive some of the consumers are. When you look at a 15% blend and you look at the price per gallon, the 15% blends have a lower price per gallon. However, when you do the math on, well, you're also getting slightly lower mileage rates. I don't know if people will do the math on that and say, I'm better off or worse off going with a 10% blend versus a 15% blend. I do think there are some consumers, there are some vehicles that do better. You don't see the mileage drag with a 15% blend that you do for some other vehicles. There is a difference. But I, in my personal opinion, is I don't know that's going to make a large difference. But I think there will be some consumers that just looking at the pricing points and saying, look, this 15% blend is cheaper per gallon, or start filling up and using a little bit more 15.
Hey, thank you.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy visiting.
It is always good. That's Frayne Olson. He is an agricultural economist at NDSU. That's North Dakota State University Extension. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet today. We'll just stay in the United States, I think. Mark Russo is here. He's with Everstream Analytics. Thank you, Mark, for being with us. Can you begin in the Northern Plains, where Wednesday, I think, they're scheduled to have a blizzard, and it'll be, what, the 13th day of April?
Well, Todd, yeah, that's certainly the story of this week is the, well, central U.S. storm, but up across the Northern Plains, it's going to be a good old-fashioned blizzard with very heavy snowfall, totals in 6 to 12 inches, even some core amounts higher than over 15 inches, along with very strong winds that'll be impacting the area, primarily across North Dakota, portions of Montana, and then that does extend into the eastern Canadian prairies as well.
You know what Frayne Olson from North Dakota State told me today about that is it's just slow-release rain, so they'll take it because of the dry conditions. Speaking of which, in the Southwest, Kansas, Nebraska, I suppose, Colorado, Oklahoma, part of the wheat and corn-growing regions there, they've been really dry. Are they getting anything out of this?
Yeah, with this storm system, we do not see any widespread or significant rains across the plains. In fact, this storm system here that's going to be strengthening in the middle of the country, it's actually going to increase the winds across all of the hard red belt. And with the stronger winds, actually is going to likely, you know, cause some blowing dust, as well as even spread some wildfires across the region. So that's the biggest threat here coming up, and no sign, along with the dryness, and just, you know, no sign of any significant improvement. Now, behind the storm, actually cooler temperatures are going to work their way into the belt, which is a good thing. Not seeing any, you know, severe cold or anything damaging, but at least the cooler weather here will kind of, you know, slow overall spring growth of the crop the second half of this week and into the, you know, start of next week.
And what happens over that same 10-day period here in the Midwest?
Well, here in the Midwest, the main highlight is actually the turn to, you know, much colder temperatures. Now, in the short term here, before this storm, temperatures will be unseasonably warm. However, again, it's going to be short-lived, with then much cooler temperatures working their way in second half of this week and then through at least the first half of next week. So you're talking about a 7 to 10 day stretch of unseasonably cold temperatures, and that's going to, again, cool down soil temperatures and limit any kind of significant corn planting. Granted, the pattern's not very wet, but with those cooler soil temperatures, that is the item to monitor, and it really puts more emphasis on, you know, can you get a good warm-up here, you know, at the end of the month to kind of bring back soil temperatures to more kind of, you know, favorable levels.
Along the Delta region in Tennessee, southern Illinois, parts of Indiana, Ohio, into the Ohio, what kind of conditions will they be working under during that time frame?
Yeah, still in general, a normal to slightly wetter than normal pattern these next couple of weeks. Now, in the short term, probably the biggest item is the severe weather risk, especially later on tomorrow and then on into Wednesday. And then with some periodic rain activity, again, that will at least limit any kind of really fast planting. And temperatures also will be turning cooler than normal too, which will also, you know, again, cool down soil temperature. So a little bit of everything there, not ideal, not any kind of disaster either, but certainly a bit more active here for this spring period.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics and joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.